Welcome to the Innovators and Investors Podcast. I'm Christian Marquez, founder and CEO of Finstrat Management. At Finstrat, we provide CFO-led accounting, finance, and reporting services to assist clients monetize their business. Stick around to the end of the podcast, and I'll share how you can be our next guest. Now, on to the show. Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Innovators and Investors Podcast. I'm your host, Christian Marquez, founder and CEO of Finstrat Management. Really excited because with us today, we have Andrea DeTillo and Jeff Esposito. Andrea is the co-founder and CEO of VeraA Technologies, and Jeff is her co-founder, who also serves as the chief operating officer. Andrea, Jeff, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Christian. Great to be here.
Happy to be here.
Super excited to have you guys. In fact, I think you guys may not be aware, but you have the distinction of being the first set of co-founders that we've had on the podcast to date. So really excited to get both of your perspectives as we start with VeraA and what problem it's solving in the marketplace.
So I've been in remodeling for over 20 years. And primarily what I did in the remodeling sector was I did sales and design. And through that, I've recognized a multitude of problems. And with Andrea's help, through discussions over the years, we decided to take a shot at solving those issues. And they mostly stem from the design and the sales side, where it gets bogged down immediately, where there's no good way to move along the sales cycle. I've also done other in-home sales, which most of those are, it's one visit. You visit somebody's home, you give them the presentation, you can quote them accurately. They can select their windows or their roofing or their siding all in one consultation. Not true with kitchen and bath remodeling. There are many consultations required. There's a lot of momentum lost throughout that process. There's a lot of back and forth, a lot of indecision, and that creates mistrust and hesitation. And as commission-only salespeople, which is who and why we're building this for, it gets very frustrating and long and drawn out. So it's not that we weren't doing well, it's we know there could be a much better way to do it. So we've taken a lot of time to really narrow down exactly what that means. And we've taken the better part of the last 2 years really focusing in on how to best solve those issues, to make it a one consultation, great experience for the customer, and a great workflow for the remodeling companies alike.
So,
fantastic.
Oh, go ahead.
No, Andrea, please.
I was going to say, what everything really stems from is a lot of the products that are out there on the market that help remodelers, you know, try to help the client visualize their space. They're just too hard to use. 76% of remodelers say the tools out there are too hard to use. And what ends up happening is they need to hire specialists, or they have to try to figure out themselves how to use these complex tools that basically sit on top of CAD or AutoCAD. And it takes a lot of skilled experience. So there's a break in the visualization between the client and the salesperson or the remodeler themselves. And so momentum is built in that first consultation as you're ideating, but there's not any visualization to go along with it. So a lot of that momentum is then lost. And then, you know, showrooms, taking the client to the showroom can bring back that momentum. But then again, every change the client wants to make, it's more back and forth. So what we're trying to do is make a seamless experience and cut down some of that fragmentation to allow for a better visualization experience for the client and both the designer, making it easy, a tool that's easy for them to use.
Makes complete sense. And, you know, I heard AutoCAD and only it put a smile on my face because both my dad and brother are architects. And so I grew up around the program. But for the benefit of our audience, can you share some insights into why tools like that are not the best fit for helping a consumer understand what how their vision is going to come to life.
Sure. Part of the reason is because, as you know firsthand, it's very complex. It takes a long time to become proficient. And even when you do become proficient, it's a mostly manual process. Yes, it's done on your computer, but it's mostly a manual drag and drop, very heavy with, you know, architectural backgrounds that you need and where to place certain things. So we're directing this product at somebody that doesn't have the expertise needed to use CAD software. CAD software was kind of augmented into the remodeling industry, never built for the remodeling industry. It's wonderful. It's here forever. It's here to stay. We're not trying to replace it. It's just we're trying to build a new tool for the remodeling industry, something they've never had before, something that's fast, doesn't have a long learning curve, very little training needed, basically a simple photo upload. And then our AI agent will guide them through the rest of the process. But we're not taking away any of the creativity from the designer, because it's not completely autonomous like AI image generators, which don't have any fidelity or real measurements. We're linking our SaaS side of the platform to real catalogs. But the AI agent will guide you through it. So you will use natural language processing. You can just talk to it. So the consultation with the customer becomes much more exciting, much more friendly. And sales happen when people see value and they're emotionally excited. CAD cannot deliver that, because I have to leave the person's home when they're most excited and most wanting to do it. But then the fear comes in because they can't visualize it, and we can't give them an accurate quote. And they have to constantly drive back and forth to showrooms or design centers to make their selections. So the idea is to try to meet them where they are with the software and have it be easy enough for a salesperson like myself, who has purchased CAD at least 3 or 4 times in my career and have never been able to master and be able to deliver designs to customers, because A, I'm on the road a lot doing sales, and B, I'm not that technical enough, and C, it takes hours and hours to do anyway, even if you are proficient. So we're trying to design something super easy that a remodeler can use, packed with information that will be valuable throughout the whole process of the remodel, and also something the client can feel confident in buying. Because if I just give you a price and lay it on the table and say your new kitchen's going to be $60,000, well, that's fine. But what am I getting for that $60,000? That's where the big disconnect is. Without a visualization, without real product being selected, it's impossible. So these sales cycles run on average of 3 weeks, and I've had sales cycles run as much as 4 or 5 months before somebody can make a decision.
Yeah. No, I mean, it makes complete sense. And I, you know, a lot of successful businesses have been built on getting the sand out of the gears. And especially when it comes to closing new deals, you can do it in a fraction of time. I mean, that's significant. So you both, I've heard allusions to your professional career in sales. You know, if we could take a step back and you guys can, if you can share with us, you know, leading up to the formation of the company, what was the inflection point where you realized that the market would benefit from a tool like this?
I guess my major frustrations, and then bringing that home to Andrea, you know, and she witnessed the hours that I would spend trying to put together, whether they're mood boards or scope of work and proposals, and then following up with other clients, and then running out on a Sunday when I'm supposed to go to the beach, but I have to be in a showroom, you know, to help customers pick their materials. She said, you know, we could solve this with technology. And I said, yeah. Great, let's do it.
So, yeah. So my background, I spent most of my career in sales and sales leadership, but also with process improvement and process improvement within that realm. And then additionally, the last company I worked for before forming Vera AI was a sales enablement company. So I was very focused with working with some of the largest companies in the world on improving their own sales enablement through technology. So this, when he brought this, you know, challenge, I was like, no, this can be solved through technology. We should, you know, then we started really thinking about it, researching it, and kind of how Vera AI came to bear.
Yeah, and on the back end, there's going to be follow-up features. Sorry, didn't mean to cut you off. There's going to be follow-up features that really tend to the sales cycle, because we also recognize, just because we can design it, pick all the materials, and accurately quote in one consultation, somebody still may not be ready to pull the trigger. It may still be something. So on our back end, we're going to have the AI agent also recommend changes. After 3 or 4 days from not hearing from a customer, we'll have our AI agent follow up with that customer, show them a new design, maybe a lower cost design, maybe something's trending and new, show them a trendier design. Try to just have a few touch points and keep them top of mind, and keep their you know, their contractor top of mind for the customer. So we're building in a lot of features to turn this more into a revenue generator and a sales assistant than a design tool.
I mean, it sounds like it's a natural intersection. Andrea, a moment ago, you mentioned that you did some research. Can you share with us how that unfolded, what your sources were, you know, what validated for you that you were on the right track?
Yeah, so I think it really came down when I started looking at, you know, where are some of the biggest challenges. And so we've done some Harvard Business Review. There's a bunch of different remodeling sites, as well as the National Kitchen and Bath Association. So that the NKBA is a very big source of relevant information. And when I started seeing on a lot of, 47% or 49% of clients cite that visualization is a hindrance to making a deal when it comes to remodeling, that was a big one. I think that might come from home builder or builder trend. So there's, and on top of that, 57% of all contracts that close, after they close, they actually go through very expensive change orders, which cause delays. And it all comes back to that lack of visualization, because things get put in, and the client's like, ooh, I really don't like that tile. That, you know, wasn't what I was envisioning. Because as I hold up my piece of tile and the cabinet and, you know, tape the sample of the wall paint to the wall, I couldn't really visualize what it was actually going to look like when it was all put together. So it's just very costly for both the remodeler and the homeowner. And it was like, wow, this is actually a bigger problem than I thought. And then, you know, come to find out, 85% of small businesses don't even use design tools, just because they find them to be too complex. So there was a lot that kind of went into here on top of, you know, home trends. Over 80% of homes are right now in the prime remodeling time, and where most people, with the way, rates are going and such, they've decided to just stay in home.
Age in place.
Equities at a record high. It's averaged, believe it or not, at $400,000 of equity in homes, which I thought was crazy. But those are the numbers from the National Kitchen and Bath Association. So people are choosing to reinvest that equity into improving their home instead of moving out.
Right.
And so I had just got done reading a book by Matthew McConaughey, Green Lights. I don't know if anybody's read it, but it's a great read. But to me, it was validation, green lights, all the research that Andrea was doing, and I participated in a lot of it as well. It just validated all the struggles that I was having in the field every single day. And one of the surprising things were, besides the validation, which was great, just kept giving us green lights to move on, was I didn't even realize there's over 820,000 registered remodeling contractors in the U.S. alone.
Mm.
and over 575,000 of them take on kitchen and bath jobs. So it's an incredibly large market from that standpoint. So we said we're going to, yeah, we're going to go for it.
Well, so so fantastic. So you're able to verify that the rest of the market is having a similar experience. So you transition your focus to an MVP. I didn't hear a tech background. And so you're a good company with a lot of founders. So would love to know what your experience was like going from, the inception of the idea to bringing the software to life.
That's a great question. And I'm just going to start up very briefly just to say that we had a fractional CTO, but we didn't even have that until we had hard lessons learned in the very beginning. So we learned some very hard lessons going into development, thinking we could conquer the world, right? And that wasn't the case. We did come out with some very great lessons, like I said, but we also came out with a few good items of code and a prototype, and we definitely proved our concept of what we wanted to do through that. So there was some positives and some negatives, and I'll let Andrea pick it up from there, what we have going on today, how far we've come with so little other than just grit and determination.
And Andrea, if you're, or Jeff, if you're willing to share, you know, would love to know what some of those hard lessons are so that our audience could potentially avoid experiencing them themselves.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest ones was not having an engineering person on the team before we went into development. So, you know, really having somebody who has that knowledge of what steps you take in a true, you know, from ideation to into a build. And it's so interesting going through more of that process now. We actually just hired a new CTO. He has over 25 years of experience, background leading teams at Apple, Verizon, HP. Very, very talented gentleman. We were very fortunate to have on our team named Madan Rangaswamy. But we've been going through a lot of the ideations that we haven't, that we didn't go through with the other ones. We also were just picking, we were very anxious saying, oh, we just got to get a prototype in the market. We got to get something to market. So we took what little money we had, you know, our bootstrapped ourselves and such. And we had found a developer who actually charged basically by the hour. And instead of based off the project, I think for somebody who's very tech savvy and can have a finger on the pulse and be able to hold everybody accountable and know what's going on, I think that that's not necessarily a bad idea, but it's a terrible idea. I would not recommend it for anybody who does not. I mean, I have somewhat of a tech background, but not in development. And I just don't recommend it going with somebody hourly, because it's especially if there's a cultural difference and, you know, cultural barriers, they might start taking it in a completely different direction. And if you're not having that, you know, constant communication, you're not necessarily getting what you're asking for. So
yeah, can't outsource the development and let them lead the project. It was our vision. We knew where we wanted to go with it, and it wasn't translating because they just didn't put in the time to understand who we are and what we were trying to build. They just wanted to get to work and charge by the hour. Not nefariously, but that's just what wound up being the case. It's something to definitely watch out for. There's a lot of pitfalls in the startup world that we can talk about another time that you have to watch out for. And we've learned those lessons as well.
You know, it's interesting. You know, what I hear is an alignment of incentive. I would generally agree with you. You know, when I think about time-based fees, I think about parties managing the clock, which isn't, you know, I'd argue, oriented with an outcome that you're looking for. So thank you for sharing. Lessons learned. you move forward, you know, and now you're thinking about go to market. What can you share with us? Not the pricing per se, but how you think about how are you going to start, you know, figuring out what to charge to start building up the client base?
I love this question. Go ahead. You can take that. I love this because we have thought long and hard about this and we've changed several times. But the new model we've come up with, I'm super excited. I just can't wait to have the product and get it out there.
So the way we're thinking about it is at first we're thinking straight up SaaS, right? You know, just you buy a license, you pay for a year annual recurring revenue. But what we're realizing is with this being an AI plus SaaS model with multiple AI agents, it's going to take a lot of consumption. So the way we've done our initial pricing, which, you know, to start it off, has been we've, you know, looked at the estimated based on Jeff's experience and how many, you know, remodelers do how many jobs per month, how many per week, what's the size of those jobs, et cetera, putting those numbers together and then crunching them with our CTO into a consumption calculator, whether it be Google, AWS, or Microsoft. And then, you know, coming up with, okay, so if we wanted to target, you know, say 75% margins, what are we going to need to charge? And so we've come up with a consumption model to start, which is a base price to get you in the door. That gets you with a certain amount of credits. And then as you either change, you know, each design, there's aspects of it that will cost you credits. Not changing textures or necessarily changing the design itself, but uploading a photo, you know, the initial design layout, regenerating, you know, a photorealistic version of the video. Those are all going to cost consumption on our back end. And so we need to be charging for those. So we're putting in a credit model. And then once we release our MVP and we have our paid beta testers starting to use the platform, we're not going to charge them on consumption. We're just going to charge them that straight entry fee. And we'll be able to understand, plus we'll have different size. We have individual designers. We have a small design firm. We have a medium size remodeling firm. So we'll be able to see how different users are consuming the credits on the platform so we can then therefore sharpen our model even further before we look to have our large launch close to around Q1 of 2026.
But we tried to create a win-win scenario and also protect against overconsumption with this model, and also we've also lowered the barrier to entry into the market, because typical SaaS, everybody's asking you for between $2,000 and $3,000 for the year to sign up, and you're locked into that contract and that's it. We're going to be more of a success-based platform. Every consultation you go on, every design you produce, you're having success with your customer. That's when you pay for credits. So it doesn't cap our revenue, and it doesn't limit them for where they feel like they may not get value if they're a small individual, you know, firm and somebody's only going to use it a couple times a month. They may not see the value. And so I think it's value based. It puts us in alignment with our end user and puts us on the same side of the playing field where we both, you know, you win, we win.
Yeah, because the more they see success by leveraging our platform, the more they're going to use the platform for all the jobs that they're estimating. And then, you know, then it will go into additional, if there's more than one salesperson, et cetera, it will expand on its own with the footprint within the company itself. So their success ends up being our success. And we're not, as Jeff said, we're lowering that barrier to entry, especially for an industry that tends to be a little laggard and a little cautious when it comes to technology.
Sure. Well, so just leading to my next question. So obviously you're very well connected in the space because you've been operating there for years. You know, to what degree are you prepared to go to your existing network to not only to you know, ask them to adopt it, but make price concessions, at least in the beginning, to start to encourage them to get you up to date.
Yeah, absolutely. We are definitely willing. I have already have reached out. I have worked with, so in the past when I was just going on appointment doing kitchen and bath remodels, I had to hire outside designers to run the CAD, to operate the CAD software. That it took me too much time and I just wasn't very good at it. So I hired designers, and over the course of my career, I used 3 or 4 different designers. I have them on board. I have a couple of the old companies I've worked for on board. I have a friend that owns a remodeling company on board. And interestingly enough, just about every week, we get at least 1, sometimes 2 or 3 inquiries from our website, which we've never done any any advertising or SEO or anything like that. Yesterday, I just got one. Hi, I'm the owner and I manage exterior and interior remodeling company in Indiana. I do sales, estimating, and designing. We're growing and I'm trying to get more efficient and productive. How does your software work? Is there an app I can download? Is it similar to Planner 5D? Please let me know. So we get messages like this coming in all the time. And that's been almost from day one. So we're building a network on top of the network I had, but we're going to stay kind of local right here in the St. Pete, Tampa area, onboard about 25 beta users for a very low price, give them some free credits, let them play around with the software, and take it from there.
And so, Arsula, building on that, then I'd love to hear, you know, from either of you, your philosophy on engaging your users. You know, sometimes, you know, there's been, debate isn't the right word, but, 2 trends, you know, on one hand you have, hey, if I would ask the market what they want, you know, I'm Henry Ford, if I would ask the market what they wanted, they would have said faster horses and they gave them a car. On the other hand, you know, you have users who say, you know, I need to be sitting down next to my client nonstop and collecting their feedback to inform my features and functions. Love to hear your philosophy on where you stand today, you know, as version 1.0 takes root.
That's a great question, and I'll answer that one. So what we're doing is right now we're going through our user flow right now to, you know, we've kind of scrapped everything the previous company had done with us. And we have a new development partner along with, of course, our CTO I mentioned previously. And once we start building out the MVP, we're going to take these beta users along with us. So it's not just going to be, okay, we build it and then we're going to give it to them to give us feedback. Oh, well, you should have changed this. I hate the flow here. We want their input from the very beginning. So we're going to be getting feedback from users from the very beginning. As soon as we start getting that UI UX design in, even without a backend connected, we want some feedback about where do you think, you know, placement of this button or that button, where do you see the flow, you know, is, should it go here or should we be going somewhere else? And we want to get that user feedback as soon as possible. It's kind of a fail fast, fix faster model. And in order to, you know, make sure we are bringing something out, putting something into the industry that they want to use and that has, you know, even the industry's thoughts built into it.
And we're kind of doing it from both sides of the marketplace, because we're not just hearing from remodelers out in the field that will ultimately be our end user. But for instance, tomorrow I'm heading to Orlando to meet with a cabinet manufacturer. So we're also taking it from the cabinet manufacturer or any manufacturer that supplies into the remodeling industry. We're taking it from their vantage point as well, because we want as many included into our software as possible to make it ultra customized to each individual remodeling firm. A remodeling firm in Florida is probably not going to be using the same manufacturers as a remodeling company in California. So we want to learn the manufacturer side as well and see how they can best implement their products and give them exposure as well into their individual markets. So I've been meeting with cabinet manufacturers. I've been meeting with tile suppliers. I'm meeting with remodelers. That's on an ongoing, constant basis. Whenever anybody will let me in the door, I'm willing to talk to them.
You know, as I'm so kudos to you. And I'll tell you, one of the things that I'm thinking about as I'm listening to you is that some of the most successful founders that I know have been the most hands-on. It's in their DNA. And, you know, sometimes it can be really easy just to conduct your entire business from behind your computer, but actually getting out into the field and meeting one-on-one with your supply chain, you know, who your users are. I mean, it's just invaluable. And I think there's, you know, great lesson to be learned, you know, for the founders in our audience to just know that, you know, there is something to be said about really, you know, getting close to where the action is, because you're going to find out things that you wouldn't otherwise.
Yeah, I mean, you may be missing the real game changer, right? I mean, it's already evolved into a different product than we first set out 2 years ago to build. It constantly evolves. And through those conversations, we're really zooming in and really hitting the nail on the head through those conversations. And we're learning how the market works. You know, I've been in the industry for a really long time, but that's myopic, right? That's super. Yeah, I had to take a bigger approach to it. I had to talk to a lot of people. A year and a half ago, we went to Vegas. We didn't have a product. We had nothing at that point, but we went to Vegas and we spent 3 days at the Kitchen and Bath Industry Show. It brings in about 117,000 attendees. This year it brought in 124,000 attendees. And we spent 10 hours a day talking to as many people as we can. And we did that for 3 days straight and continued that when we got back. So we've engaged with over 500 or 600 remodelers, manufacturers, suppliers, and dealers and things like that. And we that's all we do is talk to them and engage with them as much as possible.
I love it. That's brilliant. I mean, I think you guys said, you know, it's easy for me to say you set the bar high, but I think that's where the bar is. You know, you have to put those hours in to really understand your market. And then, of course, there's just the personal aspect too, because you walk away with having made a whole host of new connections. And I think, again, even though these are software products, you know, a lot of business is built on relationships.
Sure.
And so, you know, just knowing your space intimately, I mean, I think it's a prerequisite. Andrea, Jeff, this has been a great podcast. Before we wrap up, one of the questions I love to ask, the last question I'd like to ask is, if you had an opportunity to go back and have a conversation with your younger self, what would you share? As for both of you.
Wow.
That's a great question. I mean, if in respects to, you know, this journey, I would share, you know, go on the journey. I think if you're passionate enough about it, and it's going to be hard, but I knew that getting into it, I knew it wasn't going to be easy. But I would definitely say, don't rush into things. You know, be wary about what's out there. There's a lot of people claiming to help startups, but they're, you know, if it sounds too good to be true, it usually is too good to be true. You know, really do a lot of research. If people aren't willing to give you references, then don't even go there. That's, you know, trust your gut feeling. And I wouldn't say don't rush into anything. I would say those are probably some of the big ones that, you know, I would say to my, you know, my younger self, and also anybody out there that's looking to start a software business.
I would have a similar conversation on the vein of, you know, there are no limitations in life. You can do it. Anybody can. And just stick to it. It's going to be harder than you think. And there's going to be many days where you don't want to continue, but it's going to be worth it. So keep going.
Love it. If there's anyone in our audience who'd like to get a hold of you, how can they find you?
They can find us at https://veraai.co. Also, they can get a hold of us at info@veraai.co. That's V-E-R-A-A-I.co.
Perfect. Good stuff. Well, Andrea, Jeff, thank you so much. I appreciate your time. Glad you joined us on the podcast. And again, for our audience, Andrea Dottillo and Jeff Esposito, co-founders, CEO and COO, respectively, of Vera AI Technologies. Again, I'm your host, Christian Marquez, founder and CEO of FinStrat Management. Thank you again for joining us.
Christian Marquez here. Thank you so much for listening to the Innovators and Investors podcast. If you're a successful founder or an investor, would like to be on the podcast, please visit podcast.finstratmgmt.com. If you know someone that would be a great guest, please tag them on social media to let them know about the show and include the hashtag Innovators and Investors. I'd love to see your posts and suggestions. We're regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you catch each new episode, please subscribe to the Innovators and Investors podcast. And your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show, and it means a lot to me and my team. Would you like to know more? Go to our website, finstratmgmt.com, or follow us on LinkedIn or on X. Our handle is @finstratmgmt. This is Christian Marquez. Thank you for listening. Until next time.